And if I can figure out some kind of format for me rambling, like if it's in some product that I can feel proud of, I might could put that up in like a Patreon thing or something. I don't know. It's weird. I already started overwriting it. Okay, fine. I'll stop overwriting it. Fuck me. There'll be, if you're listening to the roughs, there'll be an abrupt transition here to me talking about something different. Here you are. Like a bass line for it. Not like a boom, 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 boom. Not another kind of bass line. But like, I'll record myself singing it, and you guys match it as well as you can. And I'll mix it all together, and I'll use that when the Slytherins sing it during the Quidditch match. And I think that'll be really, really fun. Because, like, I mean, otherwise, like, if I... Well, here's the thing. When you sing, your accent kind of goes away. Even if it doesn't, it's going to be in a crowd. And if it doesn't sound British enough... okay, so, like, I'm a classically trained singer. I know that sounds really fucking pompous to say, but it just means, like, I'm trained as a singer in the classical style. And like one aspect of that is like the way you fucking pronounce everything. If I was to sing this song the way I was, and this I was trained before my voice changed. I was in boys choir when I was a kid, and my voice changed and I stopped. But it was the way I was trained to sing. It would sound like, and again, I don't give a shit if people weren't trained. I'm just saying, like, the weird thing about singing is that coming like. King of the leprechauns, his brains are made of bronze, he makes us sick. Like that, and if you are from America and you are classically trained, it'll come out like that. And if you are from England and you were classically trained, it will come out like that. And even then, you know, you ever notice how, for the most part, like, you have no idea whether like an old hair metal band is from America or England until they start talking in interviews. You have no fucking idea. Like, moving away from hair metal, it's only like Ringo is the only member of the Beatles that sings in a British accent. The rest of them just sing. You can get hints with it sometimes, like with lovely Rita Metermaid, you know, and everything, but it's still like Jimmy Page doesn't sound British when he sings, but he is, you know. Yeah, exactly. You don't not have other. There's got to be a couple of American students at fucking Hogwarts. They never like come up, but you know. And it's all going to be a muddle anyway. If I get a bunch of, like, obviously American-accented voices singing it, I'll just sing it a few times in a British accent and layer that on, and that'll all be fine. Anyway, I'll say again, because you mentioned it again, The Shrieking Shack. Please listen to The fucking Shrieking Shack. It is amazing. It's two friends who are adult, lapsed Harry Potter fans rereading the books and... looking at them in the cold, harsh light of day, and also doing a running commentary on all the stupid shit Rowling is doing as the years roll by. I started in like 2018, when we were just kind of sort of starting to realize that she was a terrible person, and they're almost done with the entire series now. If you start listening now, you won't be able to catch up before they finish the last book. I don't think they're on like chapter 32 of Deathly Hallows or something. And like after they finish a book, they watch the movie and talk about that. They've talked about both of the Fantastic Beasts movies. At first, they were Patreon exclusive episodes, but they eventually added them to the actual podcast theme. And it's them yelling about the movies like for longer than the movies run, which is my kind of content. But like when they talk about the books, like they're very fair. They're very even handed. When stuff is good, they say that it's good. When stuff is bad, they say that it's bad. But they're not like. It's not like, rah, you know, 17 things you missed about why this is bad. It's not like hate box CinemaSins style content. It's just like them wanting them to be good, like wanting the books to be good and being disappointed when they're not good and being very funny and personable. But yeah, I've rambled for long enough. I'm going to start this recording over. Okay. So, let me see. Okay. Chapter 20, Pranks and Other Diversions. 7 September, 1992. The potion turning lime green was the first clue that something was amiss. The second clue was when it started screaming. Harry was partnered with Neville in potions today, and he immediately noticed the problem and called out for Professor Snape just before the potion's agonized wailing started. Seemingly in response, Harry, Neville, and everyone around them clutched their heads and began to sway as if overcome by vertigo. Luckily, before anyone passed out or possibly died, Snape was close enough to cast a silencing charm on the cauldron, which now had what appeared to be several mouths floating in the gooey green surface of the cauldron, all wailing in silent agony. Snape frowned at the contents of the cauldron and then banished it with a slash of his wand, along with the silencing spell. Then he turns to Neville with an obviously annoyed expression.
Your hands, Longbottom. Show them to me.
A nervous Neville held out his hands, and Snape grabbed one and turned it over. A nervous Neville held out his hands, and Snape grabbed one and turned it over so that the palm was facing up. Then he waved his wand silently, and the boy's hands turned to the same. Then he waved his wand silently, and the boy's hands turned the same vivid green as the vanished potion. The man sighed.
5 points from 5 points from Gryffindor. You will both sit quietly until the end of class. 5 points from Gryffindor. You will both sit quietly until the end of class. Longbottom, you will think long and hard about what you... Longbottom, you will think long and hard about what you might have done to have earned that point loss. If you can come up with an explanation and a good excuse, I might let you off without a dinner. I might let you off without an additional punishment.
After enduring a small amount of sniggering from Draco and his lackeys, the two somewhat dejected boys sat down until the end of class. Then, at Snape's summons, they reclosed. Then, at Snape's summons, they relocated to the front row of class.
Well? Snape asked.
Neville swallowed and glanced down at his hands, which were still green.
I'm sorry, sir. I can't imagine what could have happened.
Can't you? Can't you? He replied. Well, let me hazard a guess. By any chance, were you assisting Professor Sprout with unpackaging the mandrake seeds that arrived this morning? And were you perhaps foolish enough not to wear gloves while handling those seeds, or even to wash your hands afterwards?
I mean, I need to get the thing straightened out. That'll definitely help. Neville scrunched up his eyes in frustration.
I did use gloves, but I was running late and didn't have a chance to do a full detect. I was running late and didn't have a chance to do a full deep. I was running late and didn't have a chance to do a full de. I was running late and didn't have a chance to do a full decontamination. Honestly, I never realized that I'd been contaminated. He looked down at his glowing hands. Certainly not this much.
Well, don't apologize to me about it, Longbottom. Apologize to your lab partner. Apologize to your lab partner, for whom you've just earned a zero for the day.
The boy looked even more downcast, and Snape sighed.
Unless, of course, the two of you can find a time within the... Unless, of course, the two of you can find a time within the week that also fits within my schedule to come in and brew that potion once again.
Harry nodded. We'll compare schedules and... No. We'll compare schedules and let you know before the end of the day. Thank you, Professor.
A question for anyone who might be European or British or whatever. I'm aware that when at least when talking about school schedules, like class schedules, the word timetable is used. Would that also apply to the word schedule in this case?
I think it probably is too. I just wanted to like check. I know that Sinister likes for things to be Brit picked, and he's never objected to me changing things to be slightly more British. Yeah, I think you guys are right.
Go. Okay.
However, you're not getting off scot-free, Longbottom. By Monday, I want 3 feet of parchment from you on the importance of keeping yourself free of contaminants while brewing potions, and another 3 feet on the reactive properties of the mandrake plant.
I must confess I am disappointed in you, Mr. Longbottom.
If there was a single student in your year who I would have expected to know about the dangers of even the slightest... If there was a single student in your year who I would have expected to know about the dangers of even the slightest speck of mandrake pollen introduced into a potion, it would have been you.
I am sorry, sir. It won't happen again.
See that it does not. In any case, since you are both here, there is another matter I wished to discuss with you two. Mr. Potter, you will no doubt recall some rather serious concerns you raised last May regarding the confrontation between the other Potter and the Dark Lord. Specifically, your insinuation that the headmaster might have deliberately engineered that confrontation. However, I will require a secrecy oath before I tell you anything more. Indeed, I am only offering to tell you anything now because you are both potential subjects of the prophecy, and I believe you are entitled to be kept aware of developments pertaining to it, but only if you can keep it a secret. Speaking of which, how is your occlumency progressing, Potter?
I am confident that I'll be classified as a second-level occlumens. I anticipate reaching third level by the end of the school year.
Excellent. And I see, Mr. Longbottom, that you now carry the protection of... And I see, Mr. Longbottom, that you now carry the protections of your heir's ring. Your oaths, then, gentlemen. Your oaths, then, gentlemen.
I will also mention that on the Shrieking Shack, we are now to the point where they are consistently referring to Snape as a messy bitch that loves drama. And I can think of no better description of canon Snape. It's outstanding. Like, the part where Snape knows that Lupin is going to be teaching, like, the Boggart class in the staff room or whatever. And you see that they go from potions to DADA. And so when they get to the staff room, Snape is sitting in a chair there. And then he gets up and he's like, you know, you can have the room, Lupin. I'd rather not witness this. He would have had to run all the way from his classroom to the staff room just so he could be sitting there in a fucking chair and be super passive aggressive at Lupin and Neville. That is dedication, and I respect it. There's shit like that all over the canon books. He is a messy bitch that loves drama. The two boys each swore a simple secrecy oath,
followed by a mumbled "so mote it be" that would prevent them both from ever deliberately revealing the contents of their current conversation with the potions master.
Good. Now I can reveal to you the results of my investigation. He took a deep breath. It was all just a string of coincidences.
Harry and Neville stared at Snape as if waiting for him to say he was joking.
That's an awful lot of coincidences. That's an awful lot of coincidences, isn't it, sir? Said Harry.
Even more than you realize, I suspect. Tell me, Mr. Longbottom, how exactly did you and your Gryffindor compatriots even discover the Cerberus in the first place?
Neville quickly related the tale of Jim's abortive duel with Draco, how he and Hermione only accompanied Jim and Ron because they'd been locked out of their dorm, and how they'd all ran from Filch and Mrs. Norris, and how Hermione got them inside with the Alohomora spell she'd picked up from an out-of-print book she'd acquired.
In other words, said Snape, the only reason the other Potter ever learned of the Cerberus and the trapdoor it guarded was because Miss Granger accompanied him by complete happenstance, and because she just happened to know how to unlock the door with a rare spell not a part of the first-year curriculum, again, by complete happenstance. Honestly, do either of you really think that the headmaster could have engineered such a sequence of events? Honestly, do either of you really think that the headmaster could have engineered such a sequence of events as part of any coherent plan? If you doubt me, then consider this. You may recall that during his announcements last year after the sorting, the headmaster specifically said that the third-floor corridor was out of bounds for any students who did not wish to die a painful death. Who did not wish to die a painful death.
Harry nodded.
Yes, I always thought it was odd for the headmaster to draw so much attention to that corridor if he wanted everyone to stay away from it. Looking back, I'm surprised the Weasley twins didn't find Fluffy that night.
That, Mr. Potter, is because you are young and still ignorant of the, and still ignorant. That, Mr. Potter, is because you are still young. That, Mr. Potter, is because you are young and still ignorant of the more subtle warding techniques. When the headmaster spoke those specific words, they served to trigger a memetic ward in the corridor in question. Any student who heard those words, and who later intentionally tried to enter the third-floor corridor, would have been overwhelmed by an ever-increasing sense of certain death that would have driven away anyone not at least a fourth-level occlumens or possessed of comparable protection. The only reason Mr. Longbottom, the other Potter, and the only reason Mr. Longbottom, the other Potter, and the other two Gryffindors were able to overcome that ward and even approach the door was because they were lost at the time and didn't realize where they were. And you all were only able to return to that corridor for the final confrontation with Quirrell and the Dark Lord because Quirrell had secretly deactivated that particular ward earlier that afternoon precisely because he wanted all of you to join him in the mirror room. Harry and Neville must have both looked astonished, because Snape shook his head before speaking again. The truth, Mr. Potter, is that far from trying to engineer a confrontation between the boy who lived and the Dark Lord, the headmaster was attempting to ensure that such a confrontation never happened. The original plan was for the Mirror of Erised to be in place by September 1st, with the expectation that Quirrell would attempt to steal the Philosopher's Stone sometime around Halloween. That plan was thwarted almost from the beginning by a series of increasingly impossible... By a series of increasingly improbable coincidences that eventually brought about the very confrontation the headmaster sought to avoid. Harry's eyes widened as he recalled the words of Countess Zabini. "Prophecies want to come true," he repeated it. He repeated aloud. And they have the power to shape minor random events to help bring themselves to fulfillment. Indeed, Mr. Potter. The entire incident proved rather conclusively that the prophecy cannot simply be subverted, or at least not as easily and directly as the headmaster had thought. "And in that case," asked Neville, why are they trying to subvert it at all? I mean, Jim's pretty clearly the one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord, so why don't people focus on letting him do that?" Snape actually winced at the Gryffindor's bluntness. Questions like that, Longbottom, are why I swore you to an oath of secrecy before I said anything at all. Let me begin by saying that I still do not know the entire prophecy. To my knowledge, no one does except for the headmaster and both Lily and James Potter.
I think he probably did deliberately leave that out just so they wouldn't go looking for Trelawney. Yeah, okay, yeah, strike that. However, note that the first line refers to the one with the power t-
The one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord. The one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord, rather than simply the one who will vanquish the Dark Lord. I suspect that whatever hidden power is at the other Potter's disposal, it is not one that guarantees his victory. So what's plan B? Asked Terry as he considered the... Asked Harry as he considered the implications of what Snape had said. The man shrugged. I imagine that the headmaster and the Potters are investigating stratagems for ensuring that any future confrontations take place under controlled circumstances that will give the other Potter the best chance for victory. That is certainly what I would do in their position. Beyond that, I don't... That is certainly what I would do in their position. Beyond that, I do not know. Lord Potter does not wish to allow me any role in their strategizing, and I have no particular interest in forcing my way into their deliberations. Snape paused. Which segues into another related but more personal matter for you alone, Mr. Potter. Mr. Longbottom, will you excuse us? Neville looked at his friend, who nodded silently. Then he left the room. I had plans to contact you about this later, said Snape, but now is as good a time as any. Your mother wishes to have lunch with you one day this week at your convenience. Harry did a double take.
Sorry, my mother does what now?
Snape sniffed at Harry's lack of decorum.
Pursuant to the injunction which your solicitors put into place at your direction. Pursuant to the injunction which your solicitors put into place at your direction, your parents are forbidden to interact with you except when I am present. After the events of this past summer, your mother now wishes to try to get to know you and presumably seek some sort of rapprochement. Your mother now wishes to try to get to know you and presumably seek some sort of rapprochement.
Will my father be there? Asked Harry doubtfully.
Good Lord, no. Your mother knows us all well enough to realize that putting you, your father, and myself into an Your mother knows us all well enough to realize that putting you, your father, and myself into an enclosed space is a recipe for disaster.
Harry thought that was probably an understatement.
I'm a dumbass, by the way. I drank a boba milk tea before recording, and that's dairy. And I'll tell you this: if anybody wants to get into voice acting, don't drink dairy right before you record. It fucks everything up, fucks your throat up, fucks everything up.
September 1992. On a bright, sunny afternoon, Ginny, Tory, and the rest of the Slytherin first years made their way outside for their first day of flying lessons. Following Harry's advice, Ginny had worked herself like mad to stay ahead in her class. She'd won a total of 6 points in the last... She'd won a total of 6 points in the last week, which put her near the top of the Slytherin firsties, but she wasn't exactly dominating her year academically the way Harry had the year before. Since their last encounter, she'd avoided Ron as much as possible, though he gave no outward sign of his former hostility.
She'd also spent as much free time as she could with her other brothers. I wonder if Percy still has his notes from first year, she thought to herself. Once out on the pitch, she noticed that the Slytherins were paired with the Raven. Once out on the pitch, she noticed that the Slyther... She noticed that the Slytherins were paired with the Ravenclaws. She'd only met a few eagles so far.
Oh, God. The fuck? The fuck? How do you say that shit? I mean, is it Daquan? Is that what you're supposed to say? Daquan Chang? Or is it like something else? What the fuck kind of name is Daquan? The Sinister Man, why are you in court right now? Why are you doing your job? I don't have any, Isla Pastels, whatever the fuck. At least I know how to say pastels. Pastels are actually they became sort of a thing on the podcast I edit. There was a time when the hosts both got a giant bag of pastels and were eating them all through the fucking recording session, and I made a theme song for them. For pastels, it's just sort of playing it whenever the fucking pastels started making a shitload of noise, and it became a meme of the podcast. I don't even know what the fuck pastels were. I thought it was pastilles, but yeah. Yeah, I'm hemorrhaging people from the call right now. Normally, people might just be leaving, but it's kind of rare for the, like, it, while I was watching this now, like, the people in the call just, like, dropped by, like, half or so. Like, I know that Dragons and Otters and also, Jennifer had to leave, but, like, I didn't see them in the call before people started dropping. They had, like, already left. Can you guys hear me? Seriously, like, can you guys hear me? Can you guys hear me? Hello? Okay. Could you not before? Okay. That's weird. Well, if you guys didn't hear me say this, how the fuck am I supposed to pronounce Daquan Chang, unless it is just Daquan? But that's not a name a fucking Asian guy would have, to my knowledge, so I don't think that's what it means, that's what it's supposed to mean. And the Sinister Man is in court, so, I don't know what the fuck. Daquan. Like, Dequon. Well, okay, let me ask you this shit then. What fucking race is Cho Chang? Is there a canon answer to this? Because we know her name is utter fucking bullshit, right? Like, we know her name is bullshit. And I know how to pronounce Mandarin Chinese, but Daquan is not Mandarin Chinese. There's no way to... Like, D-E is a Mandarin syllable, but Q-U-O-N is not, and neither is Cho. So, to my knowledge, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
I know Inverarity just decided that Cho was Chinese in Hogwarts House of Divided, but he also gave the Chang, like, cousin of Cho the name Kai, which I think that was supposed to be a joke on the fact that Cho's name doesn't make any sense anyway, because Kai is also not a fucking Chinese name. I don't think so, anyway. Like, in my head, Cho's always been Korean. Kai can be Chinese, I think. But, like, Daquan? I mean, Daquan probably is right. This is more me just, like, moaning about fucking Cho Chang. The actress is Korean, isn't she? Am I wrong about that? What, Cho's name? Just make it Zhongxiang. Is that her name in like the Chinese translation or something? It's plausible. It's a guy, yeah. That didn't sound especially feminine to me for a Chinese name. It's a fair bet that every single, like almost every single masculine name in Chinese means like mighty or strong or something, and almost every single feminine name in Chinese is like the name of a flower or it means beautiful. Like it is, you know. That is the way Chinese names work for the most part. Okay, yeah. Liang, yeah. I never know. The only Chinese I know how to pronounce is Mandarin, and that's not Mandarin, so that would make sense. I don't believe Mandarin is primarily spoken in Hong Kong. Yeah. This has been entirely too much of a fucking tangent. No, not really. I mean, also, if we were really making a Chinese name here, it would be like Chang Zhongxiang or whatever. Like the last name would be first, because that's the way it does. Well, I mean, that's why I assumed you were a girl instead of gender fluid was because because of the ko on the end of your screen name, because that's highly feminine. Ah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Look, when I say I speak some Chinese, I don't mean I read some Chinese. Let me run that in the fucking... Say you say that. I'm going to put it in the Google. I can pronounce Chinese. That's fucking hard enough. It is Zhangqiu. That's how you say that. So, that is a transliteration of Cho Chang, because it is Zhangqiu, which
the U leans far closer to an O sound than a U sound. So yeah, it's Zhangqiu. And you do say it like that. You kind of sing it because that's how Chinese works. You can have whatever PFP you want, Sakiko. It's fine. You don't need to present yourself a certain way to like make your gender fluidity legitimate. You're fine. I mean, me thinking you were a girl is different from me like, you know, gendering you in speech, which I avoided doing until I knew. I'll tell you what else is fun, Coginstar. Looking on that shit for the Transformers wiki. Because there's a lot of great, especially into Chinese. I think like Optimus Prime is like, you know, like pillar of heavenly light or something like that. Like, it's fucking awesome. Oh my god. If you guys are looking at translations on the Harry Potter wiki, look up Spew. Spew is amazing. All the translations of Spew fucking rule. They rule so much ass. They're so good. Because all of them are puns. And sometimes they're bonkers puns as well. Is it? My god, I'm not even halfway done with this fucking chapter. What the hell is wrong with me? Okay. Ah. Once out on the pitch, she noticed that the Slytherins were paired with the Ravenclaws. She'd only met a few Eagles so far. Daquan Chang, Deck to his friends, was an extremely outgoing and genial Asian boy who was determined to embarrass his cousin Cho Chang at every opportunity. Saffron Brown was a bookish girl with curly brown hair and glasses who seemed resigned to living in the shadow of her older sister Lavender. Jacob Harrison was a muggle born from Liverpool who was getting... As his father was a computer programmer and his mother a secondary school physics teacher. And of course, there was Marietta Edgecombe, who was busy gossiping with Drusilla Crabbe, probably about her. While Crabbe was doing her best to act poised, Jenny thought she looked a bit queasy.
"Are you okay, Crabbe? Are you okay, Crabbe?" she asked.
Drusilla coughed.
"I'll be fine, Weasley. After all, how hard can this be?"
"You should listen to Weasley's advice, Crabbe," said Niles Harper in a nasty voice. She's probably used to flying on second-hand brooms that fall apart all the time. I bet that's all her brood can afford." Harper and Bletchley laughed at that until Madame Hooch blew her whistle. Oh, we're on chapter 20, I think. It's pranks part one, whatever chapter title has the word pranks in it. I'm trying to remember. How does Madame Hooch talk in the movie? I remember her having a somewhat distinctive voice. Or I might just be thinking of the Jim Dale voice for her. Which I don't remember what it was, but, Yeah.
All right, everyone, she said. Everyone take your position next to a broom.
She gave her usual instructions on how to call the broom into one's hand and instructed the class to try it. Tori yelled up a little too assertively, and her broom jumped up and bopped her in the nose. Ginny, who was just about to summon her own broom, stopped to see that her friend was all right.
Better look after yourself first, Weasley, said Kevin Bletchley with a laugh, assuming you can even get your broom to listen to you.
Ginny said nothing. She just stared at the two Slytherin boys with obvious disdain. Then, without even looking down, she casually put her hand out and calmly said, up, without even raising her voice. The broom flew up into her hand with a slap, faster than any of the Slytherin... The broom flew up into her hand with a slap, faster than any of the Slytherin boys had managed.
Any more advice from the peanut gallery, Bletchley?
She asked mildly. The nasty grins faded from the boys' faces to be replaced by looks of angry... The nasty grins faded from the boys' faces to be replaced by looks of angry consternation. A few minutes later, after everyone had managed to summon their broomsticks, Madame Hooch instructed the class on how to properly mount and hold the broom, stopping briefly to compliment Ginny on her perfect grip, before preparing them for their first takeoffs. She blew her whistle, but immediately there was a commotion as Drusilla Crabbe suddenly shot off the ground higher and higher until she took off into the air, screaming the whole way.
Oh, for Merlin's sake, exclaimed Madame Hooch, who suddenly was reminded of the Longbottom fiasco from the previous year. Not this again!
By this point, Drusilla was about 60 feet up in the air and screaming her head off when there was a blur of motion from the ground. Before anyone even knew what had happened, Ginny was up in the air facing the other girl with her hand firmly gripping the top of... Ginny was up in the air, facing the other girl, with her hand firmly gripping the tip of Crab's broom, which suddenly stabilized.
Drusilla, shut up!
Startled, the girl stopped screaming.
Good, said Ginny. Now keep your eyes on the broom, but relax. Your grip. Just barely hold on to keep yourself steady, and just keep looking at me.
Drusilla swallowed and nodded, and the two brooms gradually started drifting back to the... And the two brooms gradually started drifting back down to the ground in a gentle corkscrew. And the two brooms gradually started drifting back down to the ground in a gentle corkscrew. And the two brooms gradually started drifting back down to the ground in a gentle corkscrew.
My God.
And the two brooms gradually started drifting back down to the ground in a gentle corkscrew. And the two brooms gradually started drifting back down to the ground in a gentle corkscrew motion. After a few seconds, they touched down, and to Ginny's surprise, a tearful Drusilla rushed forward and gave her a huge hug that nearly squeezed the life out of her. The rest of the students crowded around the duo as Madame Hooch moved through the students.
"Miss Crabbe, are you quite all right?"
The girl nodded.
"Miss Weasley, I would say that was very reckless of you if it weren't obvious that you were in complete control the whole time. Would you care to explain, though, what exactly you did up there?"
Okay, yeah, she's Scottish. I'm making her Scottish. I'm going to pick up her previous lines.
"Oh, for Merlin's sake, not this again!"
And...
All right, everyone. Everyone take your position next to a broom.
There we go. Okay, that'll work. That's in pickup.
Did I say, would you care to explain, though, what exactly you did up there? I did, didn't I? Did I say that? I'll just say it. It's okay.
Would you care to explain, though, what exactly you did up there?
Oh, well, from the way Miss Crabbe's broom took off, it looked to me like some of the dorsal bristles must be loose and that threw the vertical stabilizers off. But I realized
But I realized that if I could grab hold of the tip of her broom with my off hand and get her to... But I realized that if I could grab hold of the tip of her broom with my offhand and get her to relax her grip enough, the brooms would sink up and I could pilot her down. She looked up and... She turned and looked innocently in the direction of Miles and Kevin. It was obvious what to do if you're experienced enough with a broom. It was obvious what to do if you're experienced enough with a broom. It was obvious what to do if you're experienced enough with a broom. Hooch chuckled and examined Crab's broomstick. You're quite all right. My apologies, Miss Crab. This broom should never have been put out for student use. In fact, I wonder now if it's the same one poor Longbottom got last year. She turned back towards Ginny. What handled Weasley? Can I assume that your brother Charlie has had an influence on you? Ginny gave what she intended to be a bashful smile. Yes, Madam Hooch. He always made a point of making sure the family brooms were thoroughly rethatched every summer. When he couldn't get any of our brothers to help him, I volunteered. He taught me a lot when my parents weren't looking that. When my parents weren't looking, that is. Hooch laughed again. Very good. Very good. 5 points to Slytherin for quick thinking and deft broom handling. Miss Crab, do you wish to go to the infirmary for a calming draught? I would not want you flying on this broom in any case. The girl nodded. Weasley, since it's abundantly clear that you're past the beginner level, why don't you escort Miss Crab? Ginny nodded. As she led Drusilla away, she noticed that most of the students, including the Slytherin boys, were giving her slightly awestruck expressions. Tori was grinning from ear to ear and giving a thumbs-up gesture. Even Wilkes smiled approvingly and offered a nice job, Weasley, as she passed by. When they were away from the class, Ginny turned once more to Drusilla.
Are you going to be okay? She asked.
Drusilla nodded.
I think so, and thank you, Ginny.
Ginny smiled at that.
Mind you, I'll probably still have to be somewhat audible to you whenever Draco is around, but thank you.
Ginny nodded.
It's all right. It's all right. I'll try not to take it personally.
Later that night... who's the first Weasley? Who's the second Weasley? Who's the third Weasley? Fuck me. Who's the first one? Okay, so the first one is not entirely on board with this plan. That probably means that it's George, right? Because George is the one that's getting cold feet about this shit, right? So that's George. And Ron is, like, diary-driven to really get this shit done, right? And he was the one that had good ideas, right? No, well... The second Weasley says, look, we all agreed he deserves a little something for always slacking on the Slytherins, even though he knows our sitter's in there right. And I don't think Ron would say that.
Well, it's Fred, George, and Ron. Like, those people... Okay.
I will read the thing straight, okay? "I still don't know if this is a good idea," said the first Weasley. "Look, we all agreed he deserves a little something for always slacking on the Slytherins, even though he knows our sister's in there, right?" said the second Weasley. "Well, hopefully this will make him think twice about it in the future, and it won't hurt anyone. It's completely harmless. Honestly, I bet he'll even get a laugh over it." "I dunno," said the third Weasley. "You have to be careful about pulling pranks at a housemate, even if he deserves it. We all do have to sleep here, after all." "That's the beauty of this," said the second Weasley. He'll assume it was Harry or some other Slytherin. He'll never even realize it was us. Best case scenario, Jim learns to keep his mouth shut about Slytherins." "And the worst case scenario?" asked the first Weasley uneasily. The second Weasley shrugged. "Most likely, Jim and Harry get into a prank war between themselves, and we just get to sit back and watch." The second and the third Weasley laughed at that, while the first remained pensive. The first Weasley has to be George, right? Like, has to be. I mean, the distinction between Fred and George doesn't matter that much because they have the same voice, but Ron doesn't. Ron's voice is a little bit distinct, hopefully, anyway. Maybe. He did, but it was at Ron's, like, Ron manipulated the situation. Oh, that's true. That's a good point, Ohana. That's a very good point. You know, yeah, I think that's actually the answer, for sure.
Okay. I'll double check with Sinistermans, but yeah.
So that would be first Weasley is George, second Weasley is Ron, third Weasley is Fred, right? Okay. I still don't know if this is a... I don't remember what I said later that night. Later that night. "I still don't know if this is a good idea," said the first Weasley. "Look, we all agreed he deserves a little something for always slacking on the Slytherins, even though he knows our sister's in there, right?" said the second Weasley. "But hopefully this will make him think twice about it in the future. And it won't hurt anyone. It's completely harmless. Honestly, I bet he'll even get a laugh over it." My God, that doesn't really sound like Ron to me. I'll do it two ways. "Look, we all agreed he deserves a little something for always slacking on the Slytherins, even though he knows our sister's in there, right?" said the second Weasley. "Well, hopefully this will make him think twice about it in the future. And it won't hurt anyone. It's completely harmless. Honestly, I bet he'll even get a laugh over it." Okay. "I don't know," said the third Weasley. "You have to be careful about pulling pranks on a housemate, even if he deserves it. We all do have to sleep here, after all." "I don't know," said the third Weasley. "You have to be careful about pulling pranks on a housemate, even if he deserves it. We all do have to sleep here, after all." And then, "That's the beauty of this," said the second Weasley. "He'll assume it was Harry or some other Slytherin. He'll never even realize it was us. Best case scenario, Jim learns to keep his mouth shut about Slytherins." "That's the beauty of this," said the second Weasley. "He'll assume it was Harry or some other Slytherin. He'll never even realize it was us. Best case scenario, Jim learns to keep his mouth shut about Slytherins." And the worst case scenario? Asked the first Weasley uneasily. The second Weasley shrugged. "Most likely, Jim and Harry get into a prank war between themselves and we just get to sit back. Most likely, Jim and Harry get into a prank war between themselves, and we just get to sit back and watch. The second and third Weasleys laugh.
The second and third Weasleys laughed at that, while the first remained pensive.
Got both versions of that now.
No, Ron's voice is not going to change over the fucking book. That's not happening. That's fuck off. I'm not doing that. Jim Dale did that. I'm not doing that. That's too much to keep fucking track of. Like, I'm already voicing all these characters as, like, you know, a 33-year-old man again. So, like, any of them is plausible as a changed voice.
September 10, 1992. The presence of Neville Longbottom in the potions room first thing in the morning when the boy did not have a class again for 4 days was the first clue that something was amiss. The look of obvious anger on the face of a boy... The look of obvious anger on the face of a boy known for severe...
severe? I would say severe for serene.
The look of obvious anger on the face of a boy known for serene unflappability... The look of obvious anger on the face of a boy known for serene unflappability was the second.
Mr. Longbottom, drawled Snape, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? What can I do for you?
I'm still working on your 6 feet of parchment due on Monday, sir. Fair is fair. I should have done a full Fair is fair. I should have done a full decontamination just to be safe, but I thought you should know about this.
With that, the Gryffindor slapped a pair of heavy gardening gloves onto Snape's desk. The man crooked an eyebrow at his student, who was acting remarkably out of character.
I see a pair of gloves, Longbottom, the presence of which tells me nothing I don't already know.
They're my herbology gloves, sir. And someone has thoughtfully filled both of them with a powdered dust... And someone has thoughtfully filled both of them with powdered dust from crushed mandrake leaves. It was some idiot's idea of a joke. It was some idiot's idea of a joke, I'll wager, but one involving a dangerous ingredient that could have killed us if Harry and I had been working with a different potion last Monday.
I see. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. I will make appropriate announcements in my classes regarding the dangers of using mandrake for flivvery... I will make appropriate announcements in my classes regarding the dangers of using mandrake for frivolous purposes. And in light of this, perhaps my earlier punishment was too hasty. Reduce your writing assignment to a foot and a half on each topic.
If it's all the same, sir, I'd rather keep it at the original length. Somebody may have pranked me, but that's no excuse for not washing up properly. As for the other, well, it's actually kind of interesting. I had no idea what all you can use mandrakes for.
Snape snorted. Gryffindors. 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 Later, during lunch, the weight on Jim's head was the first clue that something was amiss. The second clue was when the high-pitched singing started. Lunch was nearly over when Jim Potter bit into a treacle tart and immediately felt the sudden pressure on the top of his head. Hermione, Neville, and Ron looked at him in amazement, while several other Gryffindors started to laugh, particularly after the singing started up in a thick Irish accent.
Ah, thick Irish accent, okay.
Specifically, singing which emanated from the brilliant green and golden royal crown that had appeared on Jim's head, the one bearing the golden inscription, Jim Potter, King of the Leprechauns, and the song the crown produced, and which half the school would sing regularly for weeks to come whenever Jim came near, was set to the tune of God Save the Queen, with lyrics as follows.
Singing in an Irish accent. Fucking great. Okay. Shit. Let's look up some Irish singing. I can sing in a Scottish accent. I can't sing in well, I mean, I probably can, but I need to, like, figure it out. Oh, you know what I gotta do for this? You know what I gotta do for this? I gotta do, I gotta find, I gotta find, what the fuck is his name? I think, like, Dustin, his name is Dustin, I think. Dustin the Turkey, I wanna say. Actually, when was Dustin the Turkey invented? Let's see if he was invented by 1992. Yep, Dustin the Turkey existed. Okay, so let's find some clips of Dustin the Turkey. There's a fucking guy that wrote it that's over 42, I'll tell you that much right now. See, the thing is, this has some hard words in it that I don't know how Irish would change them. Well, let me try speaking it first. I'm going to try speaking it, and let's see if that gives me any clues.
King of the Leprechauns, his brains are made of bronze. He makes us sick. He makes us sick. It's really obvious that Jim is a total prat. Smart as a beater's bat, and just as thick. And not a lot of it's all that different. At least in my, like, half-assed Irish.
King of the leprechauns, his brains are made of bronze, he makes us sick. It's really obvious that Jim is a total prat, smart as a beater's bat, and just as thick.
That'll probably work for something anyway. I don't think I know any Irish people.
Well, I do. I mean, I edit a podcast that Chris McFeely's on, but I don't want to bother him with this. We're just kind of acquaintances.
I'll tell you what, not every voice actor can sing, but it is very useful to be able to sing. Okay, all right. Let's finish off the chapter.
Jim snatched the crown off his head and examined the inscription, his face turning red as more people in the Great Hall looked in his direction and started laughing. The song was apparently on a loop, as it started up again immediately. Annoyed, Jim shook the crown repeatedly in an effort to get it to stop. Then he cast a silencing spell on it. That somehow caused the singing to increase in volume. Finally, in frustration, Jim dropped the crown onto the floor underneath the table, hoping that would at least muffle the singing. Instead, as soon as it left his hands, the crown disappeared with a pop, and then immediately reappeared on top of his head. This continued for several minutes, while... This continued for several minutes, with Jim continually trying to dispose of the crown and it reappearing on top of his head and still singing its stupid song. Finally, several 6th and 7th year students, led by Percy Weasley, all cast Venite simultaneously on the crown while Jim held it in his hands, and that worked. But before the joke crown vanished, just for a second, Jim, and only Jim, could make out in four small sparkling letters at the base of the crown, S-R-G-D. S-R-G-D. And almost immediately, Jim knew what they stood for. Slytherin's rule, Gryffindor's drool. At the sound of continual laughter all around him, the boy's face flushed in embarrassment. He looked up across the room to see if Harry was watching. He was, although the Slytherin actually had the gall to act surprised, as if he'd had nothing to do with the prank, even though it practically bore his signature. Part of Jim wanted to walk across the room to confront his twin and punch him in the jaw. Luckily, he was studying occlumency now from the book his godfather had secretly gotten for him, and so Jim followed the advice the book gave for dealing with feelings of anger, embarrassment, or unhappiness.
Let me check something. Because I want this to be Rookwood's voice. No, wait. No, yes. Rookwood's Mr. Nemo, right? He is, right?
just like generic British, it looks like. Let's see. Anybody got an idea for what accent Rookwood should have? I know there is a there's sort of a farming theme or flavor to him because of the entrail expelling charm or curse or whatever, being originally a farming charm. I kind of like the idea of him being like a a borderline. Yes, it is. Is it not? Who made the entrail expelling charm famous? If not Rookwood. Is that right? I think that's right. Okay, yeah, okay, never mind. Sorry. Wait, is the entrail expelling charm canon? I thought TSM invented it. Shit, really? Okay, well, all right. Yeah, but Dolohov, you're right about that. Okay, so never mind that angle. See. I kind of want Rookwood to be fucking nuts. Like, just... would almost no I wouldn't say it goes against it because he always like I think he always fucking was like I mean well not insane in like a frothing at the mouth kind of way but like a criminally insane like sociopathic you know everyone's scared of him even the bad guys you know I might almost like the idea of doing I don't know how good my posh Irish is, but like the posh Irish from BBC Moriarty. If I can get it really fucking right. Cuz my Irish the way I do it is already a little posh anyway, but let's see. I'm going to need to rewatch some Sherlock to really make it work, but let me see cuz oh there's also there's a YouTuber, and I can't remember his fucking name. I'll find his name, though, because he's fucking great, who has an accent that's most of the way to BBC Moriarty's accent. The channel is called The Infinite Review, and it's fucking amazing. I'll find a good video. Actually, this is just an amazing video of them. I am going to do another chapter right now. But this is a good video. This is a good fucking video. That's a very good video. Actually, for a second, I'm just going to listen to him talk for a minute or two because.
Just absorbing things. Sorry, guys. Okay, I'm just going to give it a shot. Let's see. All right.
Take all those negative feelings and squish them down into a tiny ball deep in the pit of your stomach until you can freely unleash them all at once on your enemy. Until you can freely unleash them all at once on your enemy.
I'll redo that later, but that's a decent placeholder.
So Jim took that burning feeling of shame out of his cheeks and shoved it down into the pit of his stomach, where it joined all the other little fires of anger, fear, and unhappiness that he'd been shoving down there since his 12th birthday. And the fire grew just a little bit hotter. And the fire grew just a little bit hotter. End of chapter 20.